From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Twitter a few weeks ago when our Connections team asked the Rochester community a question. When you think of community-led efforts to strengthen neighborhoods or address poverty, who are the people and which groups come to mind? When discussing poverty in Rochester, we often hear about highly funded projects, corporate initiatives, or city or county-led efforts. But what about the grassroots level? And that tweet generated many responses, and we learned about a number of individuals and organizations making a difference in various ways in our community. For us, a lot of this is new, and that's exciting for us. We've invited some of them to join us on the program today to discuss their work and the impact it is having. According to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, poverty in the city of Rochester grew from 2013 to 2017 compared to the preceding 5 years. Rochester is the poorest city of its size and ranks as the worst in the country among comparable size cities when it comes to child poverty and extreme poverty. Some of our conversation this hour, yes, is about dealing with poverty. Some of it is about beautifying and improving the neighborhoods and the streets we live on, and the feeling of being a neighbor and a part of a community that is growing and trying to improve in various ways. And our guests this hour have a lot to say. In fact, we have so many, we've got to divide the hour up because it turns out there's a lot going on in our community, and I hope it inspires you this hour. Jennifer Maniga is Executive Director of Cameron Community Ministries. Jennifer, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And Kayla Toppin is here, a mentor at Cameron. Welcome, Kayla. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Also with us is Maria Worley, organizer of Mothers in Need of Others Ministry. Maria, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And Shamara Brown is a volunteer with Mothers in Need of Others. Shamara, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to start with Cameron, and I'm just going to essentially get on the list because there's this great stuff happening in Rochester. And Jennifer, how many people do you think know what Cameron is? I mean, when you think about the broader efforts here, do you feel like sort of a little bit of outside the spotlight, or how do you feel about the work you're doing?
Yeah, I think that Cameron is a hidden gem in some ways, and I wish we weren't. And so we're kind of out there to create more visibility. I think a lot of folks do know of us, and I think we're gaining some traction.
What's the short answer of what you're doing in Rochester?
So we have a soup kitchen, kids programming, and a clothing house, and a social worker. So kind of just helping families all encompass.
What do you see as the need and how that need has changed or grown in recent years?
Well, I've been there for 8 years at Cameron, and really just the statistics that you just talked about, Evan, it's startling, and it's not getting any better, unfortunately. So we are seeing a continued need of people needing food and, you know, help, safe places for their children, clothing, hygiene products, all sorts of things that we kind of take for granted on a daily basis.
Now, when we look at what's happening in communities like Rochester, often it is led by the United Way, which, by the way, of course, funds a lot of different efforts and a lot of different organizations, big and small. But it's sort of these high wattage things, whereas something like Cameron gets created. I mean, tell me about how it comes about in the first place. It's a lot of work in a community that has a lot of need.
Absolutely. So Cameron is 35 years old this year, and we used to be a Baptist church, and the congregation dwindled, and a neighborhood needs assessment was done as they saw kind of the neighborhood turn over. And it turned out the people needed clothing and a safe place for their kids and food. And so essentially those are our three programs still today. That's the need that was there 35 years ago and still.
How did you end up at Cameron?
I've always loved the inner city population and helping especially vulnerable children. I have a degree in psychology, mental health, and kind of just a God thing. I ended up there in a nonprofit, and I'm a lifer.
Wait, kind of just a God thing?
I did, yeah, kind of a God thing. So I worked for Child Protective Services before this and saw the opportunity at Cameron as something that was new and challenging. And yeah, like I said, it's been 8 years and I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon.
There was the leader of a Victor congregation who was on the program late in the year last year as we talked about sort of holiday giving. And he had a phrase that I have remembered. He said, look, we always talk about doing good, doing things that are good, doing good for the community. And that's good. And a lot of people will write a check. And that's important. I mean, organizations need support. And my guess is everybody on the program today would probably love support in that way. But he said, that's a good thing. actually spending time with people in need is a God thing. And I remember that.
Absolutely.
I remember how, I wonder how you feel about that.
I couldn't agree more. So it's time, talent, and then treasure. And so we really need people. We need bodies there volunteering and mentoring and just being, you know, on the ground. The direct service folks are the ones who really make the difference.
And tell me again how many people you're serving now.
So for our soup kitchen, we serve over 30,000 meals a year. It's a pretty large number. And in our after-school program, we have 50-plus children. We had 50 children there all summer, all day in our summer programming. The clothing house is really busy. Over 2,000 folks come through and shop a year. And we're starting a brand-new teen center this fall that will serve up to 50 young adults as well.
So a lot happened in there. When you talk about the clothing house, right. What exactly are we talking about?
So a clothing house, it's pretty much a consignment store in a way. Folks are able to come in and shop for a dollar, and they are allowed to grab a whole bunch of things for their family, clothing, hygiene products, diapers, wipes, just a bunch of things, boots, winter coats, things like that that they need. So it's kind of a boutique right there on Cameron Street.
Where are you getting the clothing from?
Donations. Yes. Yes.
Do you need donations?
We always need always donations.
Used clothing okay?
Absolutely. Used. We have a phrase called donate with dignity. And so if, you know, you are throwing it out because it's kind of ragged, then we don't really want that. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks anyway. But we like to serve people with dignity and offer a hand up and not a handout.
Donate with dignity. And by the way, as we go throughout the hour, we'll make sure you know how to get in touch if our various guests today would like you to get in touch. What's a way to do that with Cameron?
Our website is the best way to do that. So it's www.cameronministries.org.
The kitchen does hot lunch program, what, 6 days a week?
7 days a week.
7 days a week now?
Yes.
And where's food coming from?
So we are big partners with FoodLink, mm-hmm. As most of the nonprofits are in this area. And then we also have a lot of individuals and churches and just groups who come together, the Boy Scouts, and, you know, just do food drives. It's a great thing to do, especially with kids. It's something that's easy. Kids can go, you know, to Wegmans with their parents and pick out some food or do it in the schools. So we have a variety of different sources of that.
You have a summer safe haven program.
Yes,
we do. Tell
me
about that.
So that's you know, an extension of our after school program. So we do still continue the academic piece that we know is so important. We want to prevent the summer slide. But also it's about exposure. And so we are taking our kids on field trips and getting them out to places that they may not otherwise have exposure to. An example of that is, you know, the parks, Ellison Park or Letchworth, and just kind of letting the kids go out and explore outside of 14606. And it's a really neat opportunity. And as well, we go on college tours and alternative high school tours, just really giving exposure to the broader Rochester area for our kids.
The after school program has been there for how long?
35 years.
Since the beginning of this,
yes, sir.
Of the launch of Cameron. And you're helping how many kids roughly now with after school?
So 50 kids after school, and they are ages K through 6th grade right now. So 5 to 12 years old, and they come every day, they get a snack, and then they do academics.
But you talk about wanting to expand into teenage years. In what ways?
Well, that's right. So just like my co-guest here today, Kayla, most of our young people have started since being in kindergarten. And so we see these kids at 4 and 5 years old, and they go through our program. And then after 6th grade, we pray that we've given them the foundation to keep doing well because we don't have any more programming for them. And that's kind of been a tragedy and a gap in our services. So now we're able to close that gap by offering our teen center, which has been an amazing capital campaign over the last 2 years. And it's going to offer services for 7th through 12th graders.
How much money have you raised?
We have raised $500,000.
How much did you need?
That's about what we needed.
So you're there.
We're there.
That's really great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Kayla has been benefiting from Cameron since what? About kindergarten? Is that right?
Yeah, I started Cameron when I was really, really young.
Tell me your first memories of Cameron.
So I remember the first day we went bowling. Like, there was a lot of new stuff that, like, I never got to do before.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's my earliest memory.
And what has it been like for you? Tell me just sort of about your experience over the years there.
So I started off young in the after-school program, and then it would go to summer program, and then, you know, back and forth throughout the years. And then once I started getting older and I graduated throughout the program, I started volunteering. And Cameron has a scholarship program where we send some kids to private schools, like Mercy and McQuaid and Aquinas. So I did that, like, so I got into Mercy, and they, you know, helped me through everything, all my family issues and any problems I was going through. Mm-hmm. And then, so once I started getting older, I started volunteer every summer and school year and after school program. And now since we're about to open the teen center, I'll be volunteering there, helping out with the kids there. So.
And are you still at Mercy?
Yes.
When's the first day of school?
On Friday.
It's on Friday?
Yeah.
Man, a lot of people are back today. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe they were letting you kind of get out early to come hang out in Connections. No, mm-hmm. Not till Friday.
No way.
I was going to say, that's very generous. When you talk about all the help that they have done for you and, you know, and the family challenges, how many of your friends your age have needed this kind of help that you've grown up with?
A lot. Like, most of my friends would definitely have benefited and would be, you know, different people sometimes or make better decisions through the programs that we learned, like the girls group program at Cameron. It's called Respect and Responsibility, the R&R girls group. Like, if some of my friends maybe have been through that, have learned that, then they make better decisions, you know? So a lot of my friends could have.
And when you talk about decision making, give me an example of the kind of things that, again, it's not to kind of call out anybody individually, but the kind of things generally that you're proud that you made different decisions, but you might see where things can turn. What's the kind of thing that can happen?
Like, well, through the girls group at Cameron, they taught us a lot about, like, futures. And like she said, we went on college tours. Mm-hmm. And as, like, one of my friends, they don't go to school. They don't want to go to school. They have, you know, I'm not, like, trying to down my friend.
No,
but
no, I hear you.
The motivation piece is not there. And the way we talk at Cameron's all positivity, future, like, stuff like that.
Well, I think, and I want to bring Jennifer back in, it's a little easy and I think maybe precarious to generalize a view of kids who don't go to school as not caring or lazy. Whereas if you grow up in poverty, if you grew up thinking there aren't a whole lot of routes to being successful in life, then you're not probably thinking too much that college is a place for you anyway, I would think. What do you think?
Absolutely. That's right. And so that's why that exposure piece is so important. So we're giving them the support every day at Cameron, giving them the love and having them understand their potential, but then exposing them to those opportunities. So if they're not there, they don't go see the cool gym and, you know, facilities, cafeteria at Fisher, then they don't know that it's there. And so if they have that opportunity, they can say, oh, wow, this could be for me.
That is there and it's for them.
That's right.
Now, Kayla, what do you want to do? Give me a little timeline of what you'd like to do with your life now.
So I'm about to start 11th grade. So I want to finish these 2 years out at Mercy and get a scholarship to the University of Rochester to study biology, because then I go to medical school and I'll become a pediatrician. And that's what I'm going to do with my life.
And why is that a course you've decided you want?
Since I was real young, I wanted to, like, you know, help people. And, like, I really like kids. Like, I'm very good with kids. So that just seemed like a fit.
Are you patient with young kids?
I am.
Yeah?
Yes, I'm very good with kids.
She's very good with kids. And she's right that she has said that she wanted to be a pediatrician since the time I can remember. I've known her for 8 years.
It's awesome. Now, it's, you know, any kind of medical path has a long road ahead of it. And you've probably learned a lot about that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the challenge?
So I'm up for it. I'm very, very resilient, especially, like, that's something that Mercy has taught me. I feel like it teaches you have to keep going. And that's also with Cameron. They have always pushed me. They have always, like, shown me that there's a way to get through it. So to be resilient, mm-hmm. and to keep going.
Do you talk to people your age, friends who maybe aren't thinking about school? Do you try to help them see the value?
I try a little bit. I don't like to tell them, you know, how to live their life. But
yeah, yeah.
I try to throw in little hints and try and get them to be, you know, their best self, the best they can be.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I want to kind of build on what Jennifer and I just talked about and just ask you, very directly. If you think that some of the kids that you grew up with and some of the young adults now grow up thinking either college isn't a thing for me, it's not a thing I could afford, what is the mindset about a future that prevents some people, you know, your peers, from finishing high school or going to college?
So a lot of people might think, like you said, that they can't afford it, and like they get one thing in their head and it downs the whole idea of going to college. Maybe they think it's too hard for them, or even like if they've never had the support, you know, that it would be too much to handle all on their own. And then, you know, a lot of people just stop thinking about college and even like dropping out of high school, you know, and then people also get distracted into other things and, you know, in the like the community, not like, but so also with Cameron, it, so we're not on the street.
Yeah.
We have somewhere to go, to where we know we're safe, like summer safe haven. We know we're safe. We're not like home alone, you know? It gives us a better alternative.
Yeah.
So.
And let me ask you one more direct question about that. Is there, generally speaking, not among everybody, but sometimes, is there a perception that college is for rich kids?
Sometimes a little bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes, Jennifer, it's just about making sure people understand that there can be a path.
Yep.
For you. And that does not absolve a society that is pretty inegalitarian, that is pretty, it has a lot of work to do with opening paths. But the concern that I have is, you know, kids may grow up thinking, what is the point? Mm-hmm. There is no path for me. I'm not even going to finish high school. College isn't for me. It's not for someone like me. I don't. And if that is the mentality, that's really tough. But what you seem to be doing is helping change that mentality.
Yeah, that's right. And so if these kids don't see that, and most of them don't, the cycles of poverty are generational. And so if they don't have examples of people who look like them, are like them, came from the city, mm-hmm. then they don't think that that's something that's for them. And so that's exactly what we're trying to change. We bring in a lot of role models that Kayla talked about, the R&R for Girls group. We bring in a lot of role models, a lot of women who are business owners, who, you know, are diverse in every way possible, and letting them know, this was my story, and now this could be your story as well. It is for you, too.
What do you think about the overall anti-poverty effort and the initiative in Rochester?
I think it's an effort, as you say, and I think that we need it. We absolutely need to change something. I think that the most traction that that group can get is to actually be with the people who are doing the hands-on work. I invite anybody from that group to come and sit in the soup kitchen and or in my after-school program and talk to people who actually are the ones who are receiving the help and see what it is that they really need.
Do you think, and again, generally speaking, because this I'm sure this doesn't apply to everyone, but would you agree with the statement, too often people in power who are trying to make decisions about economic opportunity and poverty do not have a whole lot of direct experience with people who live in poverty?
I definitely agree with that. Absolutely. And we need those folks around the table for their connections. And they obviously have a care for our community, but we also need people who are doing the work and who are in need of the help to help make the decisions and guide exactly where this is going.
So they can find you. They can show up anytime they want.
Please
right?
do. Absolutely.
Jennifer Maniga is the executive director of Cameron Community Ministries. She's been there 8 years, but Cameron's been doing this for 35. Where are people going to find you online again?
At www.cameronministries.org.
Kayla, will you come back in a few years and tell us about how you're killing it at school
yes.
and in life?
I would be happy
it's,
to.
It's really great, and I'm very impressed, and I'm really happy for you. Thanks for
Thank
being
you.
Here. I
Thank
want to
you.
Turn to Maria Worley and Shamara Brown. They're here from Mothers in Need of Others Ministry. And Maria, as an organizer, I'll start just by asking you to kind of introduce us to Mothers in Need of Others.
Okay. Mothers in Need of Others was started 15 years ago when I met a woman that was pregnant with triplets. I wanted to figure out how to help her, and Minnow was an answer to prayer as to how to help her with that. I organized 14 women from our church. We collected baby and maternity items, and I ran all over the city delivering them. It got too big to do eventually, so what I did was we have the case managers come to us now. So the moms don't have to bring their babies out in the cold. They don't have to worry about transportation. There's no privacy issues. The case managers come, they get the items for their clients, and they bring them directly to them.
As a dad, I was talking to my mother one day about parenting and talking about how difficult it is. And she said, reminder, you are a twin, I'm a twin. And she said, so as hard as you think it is, she said, when you have twins, it is not just doubled, it's exponential. And now I'm thinking of triplets and the story that you're telling about what inspired you and thinking about this mom, the challenges in front of her. How many people are you helping serve now?
About 60 people a month. We have 72 agencies and churches that we help, and 242 case managers and church outreach people that we work with.
How do they get in touch with you? How does that happen?
Basically word of mouth, but we do have Facebook pages. We do have websites, it's our case managers are our best advertising.
So it's called Mothers in Need of Others, and where do they find you then?
We are at number 1 Favor Street in the Youth for Christ building. We've been there since October now, and it's just growing by the day.
And they can find you online and social media in various forms?
Absolutely. There? Mothers in Need of Others. We are also a part of a nonprofit called Project Urge, and we've been with them since 2006. So,
what do you need most right now?
Diapers, wipes, personal hygiene, cleaning products, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, anything that people could do would be great.
Literally, people can drive to where you are and drop it off.
Yes, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 4, we're there. And we do take car seats, strollers, pack and plays. I do the recall checks and inspections myself.
Wow.
So.
Wow. What is it about you that led you to want? I know you tell the story of the mom and the triplets, but I mean, did you envision this for yourself, doing this kind of work?
You know, I have 6 children of my own. It's a labor of love. I love what I do. That woman kind of, I mean, God puts you people in the right place at the right time. My heart just went out to that lady. Thank God I didn't have them all at once. But I know the struggles of having a big family, trying to make ends meet. You know, it's tough. It can be tough. And I have a wonderful husband, thank God. But I can't imagine doing it without. And I know that's life. That's a reality for so many moms nowadays. And I just wanted to help.
Single mothers really are superheroes.
Yes, they are.
It's amazing what single parents do. I mean, but in this case, we're talking about mothers in need of others. And so is there a sort of a threshold that you want to work with for people in terms of either income support that they may already have, people who would be eligible to get this kind of help? Determined by the agencies you're working with?
Exactly. It's the agencies who set the standard. We work with people with disabilities. We work with people that are in all kinds of crisis situations. We work with teen moms. We work with all. It runs the gamut. It runs the gamut.
Do you think that, generally speaking, our society is supportive enough of mothers and young mothers?
No, but I think it's starting to improve. I think there's an awareness growing. So.
Okay, well, I want to bring in Shamara Brown, who's a volunteer now, and has been working with Mothers in Need of Others for how long, Shamara?
I'll say about life for 3 months.
For about 3 months, mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me a little bit about your story. How did you come in contact with them?
Well, I got in contact to them through my tax worker, and it's like the very first time I started working there, I just couldn't leave.
You couldn't leave. Why?
Because I love what I do there. I love helping moms that need help with their kids.
And Shamara, do me a favor. Just get a little closer to the microphone because I want to be able to hear you. Go ahead. So you love working with mothers?
I love working with them.
Is there something about that stirs you?
I love working, helping kids get what they need, mothers get what they need.
What is it about volunteers like Shamara that are helping you most here?
I just love seeing them grow and develop. Shamara, we actually taught her how to sew the feminine hygiene bags that we put the feminine hygiene products in, and it was the first time that she had ever sewn anything. She did a beautiful job, and just to see the look of pride on her face was outstanding. It was awesome.
How much time are you spending now working with this organization, Shamara?
I spend a lot of time.
Yeah? What's an average week like? Kind of give me a sense for what your week in the organization is doing. What's a week like?
Well, we're there Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 4. We schedule case managers to come and pick up items, and people are dropping things off. It's very busy for the 5 hours that we're there, and Shamara is busy sorting and packing and repacking and cleaning, and we're busy. I wanted to add that Shamara is a part of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children, their Teen Moms program. So we work with their Teen Moms program and Youth for Christ. Their teen moms come in and they help us with the cleaning and the organizing and things like that. And they learn customer service skills. They learn what it's like to work in a warehouse. So they're developing their job skills.
Now, do you think there is in our society, a stigma for teen moms that makes it hard for them? It's already a challenge to become a mother. And we're thinking about teen moms now and what it might mean in terms of potential for schooling, future economic prospects. Tell me your thoughts on what can be done to make sure that the kids of teen moms have a better chance and the teen mothers themselves have a chance.
Education. Stay in school, learn a trade, go to college. Life isn't over when you have a child, and all of your decisions, you're thinking for two. You're making decisions for two people as opposed to just yourself, and you want to give them a future as well. So every decision that you make, you're setting them up for success as well.
Shamara, as a volunteer and someone now who's doing some important work here, what do you want to do in your future? What does your own future look like to you?
Either being a fashion designer or doing cosmetology.
Okay, great. And do you feel pretty good about thinking about your future? Yeah?
Yes.
That's great. I mean, how much are you thinking about, Maria, working to make sure that people like Shamara, people you're working with, are also thinking about their own futures and making plans for themselves?
Well, we talk quite a bit, and we're fully supportive of that. Even on the way over here in the car, we were talking about her classes that she's taking to meet her goals. So we talk frequently about things like that. So
before I let you go here, let me ask you a little bit what I asked Jennifer about, which is that your views on how our community is doing with its anti-poverty efforts. I mean, you're tackling a small slice that you say that we're going to grab onto this and we're going to do the best work we can and we're going to do as much as we can. You can't do it all. Part of the why you're all here today is the grassroots efforts that often don't get the attention. But on the macro level, from what you're seeing, as best you can tell, how do you think we're doing in this community?
I think that there's a big change. When I started this 15 years ago, I think that the agencies were very much working as silos unto themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a very encouraging and growing trend now that agencies are starting to work together. As a matter of fact, Jennifer and I had the pleasure of working with one another at their, they did a community baby shower that our agency was able to take part in, and it was
Absolutely.
A wonderful experience. So that's what our agency does. We work with different programs and try to assist them in helping the people that they help.
Let me turn back to Jennifer for that. Do you agree with the idea that this is a community that is at least becoming less siloed?
Absolutely. We see a lot of collaboration, just as Maria said, and we can't do it all alone. So together is definitely better.
Well, listeners, I suspect some people are hearing this going, hey, Connections, it's awesome that you're focusing on these folks. Did you not know also about X, Y, and Z? You can always tell us. We're trying to tell the stories of Rochester, the Finger Lakes, the broader, greater Rochester region. And sometimes we're doing it neighborhood by neighborhood, street by street, and the people who are working hard in our community to help. And I really admire that. And so, listeners, if you want to contact us and tell us about more that you think we ought to know about, it's connections@wxxi.org. You can do that whenever you like. And those are a couple of stories. Cameron Community Ministries, Mothers in Need of Others Ministry, Mothers in Need of Others. People can find you where, especially if they're going to drop off those materials that you really need on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
You can go to our Facebook page, Mothers in Need of Others, or Project Urge.
And you're down, your physical location is where?
Number 1 Favor Street in the Youth for Christ building.
They're open right now, it turns out.
Yes, we are.
11 to 4, we're in that window on a Wednesday. Good luck to you. Thanks for telling your story. Shamar, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. After our only break of the hour, we're going to talk about making our neighborhoods, well, look like the kind of places that you can be proud to be in, the kind of place that you'd want to stay in, the kind of place that you'd feel proud for anyone to come into, no matter your background, no matter income levels, beautifying place by place, yard by yard, street by street. It's happening in Rochester, and that story is next. Coming up in our second hour, when you think of the late Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, do you think about fashion? How about a Louise Slaughter line, a Louise Slaughter collection? Well, there's a great story behind that, and we will talk about it next hour as we preview Fashion Week of Rochester, which is coming next month. The story of the Louise Slaughter line and the story of local designers whose work will be featured at Fashion Week next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we are talking about grassroots work in our communities, trying to make our communities stronger and better in different ways. And we're welcoming the folks behind a project called Blocks in Bloom. Kathy Lewis is the organizer. Lydia Rivera-Warr is a participant in Blocks in Bloom. Kathy, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Evan, for having us on.
And Lydia, welcome back. Nice having you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so Blocks in Bloom, what's the short definition for what you're doing, Kathy?
Well, we're a community beautification initiative, strengthening and beautifying our community one block at a time. We're part of the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Monroe County and a program of the Master Gardeners who work there.
Okay. And
who volunteer there, excuse me.
What sparked the launch of this?
Well, when I first became a Master Gardener, which is about 7 years ago, I felt that I wanted to sort of extend what I had done in my work life, which was work with communities in Rochester, low-income communities, and combine that with my passion for gardening. So along with another master gardener, we piloted this program to really work to strengthen blocks, a block at a time, by working on a common project, which was creating front yard flower gardens.
Front yard flower gardens.
Yes.
Though as I've been reading, some of the participants might have thought at first, oh, great, you're going to come plant my yard for me.
No.
It's not exactly like that. How does it happen?
So we need a block in a lower income neighborhood within Rochester where one person steps forward. Lydia was one of those one person.
We're going to get her story in just
yes.
a second.
And says, this would be great for my block, and I will sign up at least 6 of my neighbors who also want to beautify their front yards. We've had as many as 30. There is no maximum number. But the idea is that we need a critical mass because it's a community project, not an individual project. We go and walk around the neighborhood, take a look at what's there, what's needed, what people want, and then we go raise donated plants from individual gardeners, from garden clubs, from Lowe's. Lowe's has been very generous with us, from other places. And the city provides compost and mulch. So it's really a collaborative effort. And then we provide 2 mentors, experienced gardener mentors to each block who teach people how to garden. Some people already know how to garden. On every block, there's somebody with an already beautiful garden. So and they can help other people then. But we work together, but people create their own gardens and maintain them.
So you've been doing this, again, since what year? When did it start?
2014.
Because I'm looking at a map, and you're all over the place now.
Yes. We have we serve about 15 blocks per year. And to date, we have served 71 blocks, 665 households.
Wow.
And it's a very grassroots shoestring effort. So this is virtually everything is donated.
When you talk about 71, I mean, that's a big number. But what's for you, not just having at least six neighbors that want to do this, but is there any kind of a baseline? You'll go anywhere? Is there sort of a threshold that you'd say, okay, you know, we can help you here, we can't help you here?
We have turned down blocks that are perfectly capable of buying their own plants, buying their own materials, and starting their own gardens. So we focus on blocks where the cost, we say $150 to $200 of starting a perennial flower garden, a small one in front of their house, would be a barrier to doing that. And so those are the blocks that we work with.
Do you, once you get this up and running, do you feel confident that your work is going to be sustainable, that what you've chosen to plant and put in there, you know, the hard work of getting it in the first time, where you're going to see it sort of flower, to use the term, year after year?
Well, Evan, if you've talked with or if you know gardeners of any kind, you'll know that there's not 100% success rate for gardeners.
Unfortunately,
so,
yes.
Some of them do sustain and do succeed, and we now have gardeners, participants in Block and Bloom, who are dividing the perennials, something that we teach, and donating them to either their neighbors or back to Blocks in Bloom for other blocks and other households. So certainly some succeed, some fail. There's streets where we work with both renters and homeowners. Mm-hmm. So there's streets where there's a lot of turnover. And will the next people who come and keep it up? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But overall, what I can say is that all of the blocks are in some way stronger and more cohesive because of the effort.
Perennials are the ones that come back, and the annuals are just the one-timers,
right?
That's
correct.
Okay, see, it took me a little while. what's the kind of perennial that you think really works well? What are you using a lot of?
So our plants are donated, so it's whatever people donate. But we look for what we call tough-as-nails perennials, which are perennials that are hard to kill and will establish themselves in a variety of conditions and will spread rapidly. So things like Shasta daisies, black-eyed Susans, hostas, ferns. But again, because they're donations, we get a pretty wide variety of things.
I have heard it said that you really can just split a hosta, and it's fine because it really grows, and then you can just split it, plant it somewhere else, and off it goes. Is that largely true?
That's completely true.
Hostas, okay.
Yes, and other plants as well. So one of the things we do, we have a celebration potluck supper at the end of the season in September. We invite everybody there, and we do a demonstration of how to split a hosta or mm-hmm. a daylily yeah. or another perennial.
I love that. Also, before I get to Lydia's story, this is a totally selfish question. Let's just say hypothetically, somebody has a really shady yard.
Yes.
Is it too late in the season now to plant grass?
I'm going to refer you to call the garden helpline for
no,
that question.
No, Kathy, you are the garden helpline. You're helping all the listeners who want a more healthy lawn right now, who will feel like it's too late.
Yeah, fall is generally a good time to work in the garden, both lawn and you can plant perennials. It's a little late for planting annuals, except for the fall months.
Gotcha. Well, Lydia Rivera-Warr, how did you first hear about this and how did you get involved?
Well, it started when I participated in the Parent Leadership Training Institution program. I had to do a community service project, and my classmates were working on all types of great projects like racial injustices in the city school district and forming like physical activity events for mental or physically challenged children. And I had no idea what I wanted to do. And it was actually on my way, I was actually walking down the street with my daughter. And when we were walking down the street, she asked me why our street was so yucky. And I didn't have a good answer for her. And I just told her, you're right, there's no reason for it. So I reached out to the neighborhood association, and they connected me to Kathy Lewis, who was in charge of the Blocks and Blooms program.
So. And then? This was when, by the way? How long?
This was actually last year.
Last year?
Last year,
okay.
Yep. So
I made connections with the Neighborhood Service Center, and they pretty much told me the city can't do everything. We have to have participation within the community. And, you know, we just need our neighbors to really care about where they live. So I started going out, picking up litter, and befriending my neighbors. I didn't know anyone on my block at the time because I just moved over there. And they started asking me questions like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? We've lived here for years, and we just got tired of maintaining our property because, you know, there's always somebody littering. And, you know, I just explained to them, hey, you know, your front yard is just like the inside of your house. You have to wash your dishes every day and, you know, maintain the inside. So this is just something that we should all be doing. And through that, the kids started joining me and picking up the litter. And when the opportunity for the Blocks and Blooms came, the kids really stepped it up. They stepped it up and they helped create the flower beds. And once the plants arrived, the neighbors, you know, helped plant their flower beds, and it just took off from there.
I love hearing that story. How's it look today?
It looks much better than when we started. Out of the 18 houses that joined, there's about a good 12 that actually maintained it. Mm-hmm. My street has a high renters population, so there has been some turnovers. But for the ones that are still there, they have been maintaining their gardens.
2 out of 3 on an average is probably a pretty good ratio. You agree with that, Kathy?
Yes, especially for a block of renters, mm-hmm. primarily renters. And actually, one of the success stories on Lydia Street that I find is that one of the renters, when they moved to a new rental property, different rental property, they dug up their flowers and took them with them. So that was a real indication that they cared about them.
Yeah,
I mean...
They didn't belong to the landlord. That person had gotten them.
In a
them
sense, it's like, that's harsh, but it's like, wow, they really appreciated this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And there were other successes on Lydia Street as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this program also brought the neighbors together. I mean, we had other issues besides the beautification part as far as the litter. We actually had an open drug market on our street. And by the neighbors coming together, we were able to talk and, you know, no one was doing anything because they didn't know what to do. So we actually banded together, went to our neighborhood association meetings, and spoke with the Rochester Police Department. And they just started saying, you know, just call it in. You see something, say something. And, you know, our neighbors would be out looking out their window and taking license plate numbers and, you know, just calling each other. Like, did you see what was going on here? And did you see what was going on there? And, within a few months, that drug house that was causing problems because, you know, prostitutes stay close to the drug dealers. So we had prostitution issues on that street, too. It settled down. Not to say that all our problems are fixed on our street, but it's definitely completely a different atmosphere from what it was last year.
It sounds like there's no question that you are a more connected street.
Yes, definitely.
By neighbors. And when we think about what a neighborhood is, even on streets that where everything already looks like what your daughter said it looked yucky or something.
Yep.
Even on streets your daughter would say, oh, this looks pretty. My guess is most people, no matter where you live, no matter what your income is, any more than 2 houses down, you probably don't know the names of the people who live there. Now, there are exceptions, but for a lot of people now, there isn't a whole lot of connection anymore for a lot of different reasons. And it's kind of a bummer. So that has changed on your street. There's more comfort in communicating about the concerns you have, in your case, an open-air drug market, prostitution, communicating with police. I also wonder if, you know, in some small way, the way we feel about how our streets and neighborhoods look can almost sort of have a psychic impact, a psychological impact on the way we feel about ourselves and the expectation for what life is going to be like there and for how long people would want to live there. And if there's a lot of rental turnover or less rental turnover or more buyers. I mean, do you think that's overstating it or do you think there's something to that, Liz?
No, I think there's definitely something to that. And I know, you know, a lot of renters, they just feel like this isn't my property, but this is, even though you're renting, this is the home that you've created. So it doesn't matter who owns the property, you're there. And just having a sense of pride at what you're at in life, you know, financially, it doesn't matter. We could still live comfortably where we're at.
So is it a front yard garden? Is it a little?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's still there?
Yes.
What's in it?
Oh, I have daylilies. I have a salvia, lavender, black-eyed Susans, yellow drops. It's actually pretty nice. This was my first time I ever planted anything in my garden.
So you're not someone who had a green thumb before?
No, not at all. I didn't have any idea what I was doing. And it wasn't, it was for the mentors through the Blocks and Blooms that actually showed me. And I'm very confident now.
So. And I want to mention something else about Lydia's involvement is that last fall, for the first time, having been in business then for 5 years with Blocks and Bloom, we offered a training for our former block captains like Lydia to become mentors for another block. And they went through 4 Saturday mornings of training to learn how to mentor another block. And 9 people, including Lydia, graduated from that and are now mentoring other blocks.
You probably never thought you'd be doing that.
Not at all.
I love that story. And do you find, Kathy, that when you've got a street, you know, you said you need at least 6 neighbors to say, I want to do this. I want a front yard garden. I'm willing to try to maintain it. Let's say you get 10 on a street that do it and you're working on a street. Over time, do you expect to hear from other neighbors who will say, look, I didn't do that, but it looks good. I kind of want that. Does that happen?
Absolutely. And for that reason, we have an option that a block can stay in for a second year or a third year, or as long as they want, as long as they add 5 additional houses each year stay in the program.
Okay, so if people want to get in touch and would love to see this happen on their street, Blocks and Bloom is what it's called. Kathy Lewis, how do they find you?
Okay, so we are, again, a program of the Master Gardeners of Monroe County through the Cooperative Extension of Monroe County, which is up at 2449 St. Paul Street near the zoo entrance. And the phone number for Cooperative Extension is 753-2550. There's also a website, monroe.cce.cornell.edu. And Cornell Cooperative Extension has a variety of other programs that work with residents in the community to teach gardening, and some of them also work on community empowerment. So community gardens, we have an urban 4-H program, we have a seed to supper program. So this is not the only program, but it's one that we believe really deserve, people like Lydia and the other people like her really deserve some community recognition.
It's great stuff. Lydia, how much work has it been to maintain it in the first full year when you're sort of on your own here in 2019? How much work?
This year, it's actually been, it wasn't too hard because we made the flower bed, we used the tiller and we made sure to get a lot of the grass up. So, and then we used mulch, so we didn't have too many weeds growing back in.
Yep.
The only thing I did was rearrange some flowers because I thought, you know, now I see how high they grow and yep. how low they grow. So I was able to rearrange them to, you know, have a better presentation.
Yeah. How do you have it edged in?
Oh, I just have one part of it is like a wooden border, just a log mm-hmm. to kind of separate the flower bed and the yard, the grass. And then the other one is like a, I don't know, it was there before I moved in, but some kind of trimming along the way. Yeah.
Okay, and Kathy, is there an average size of the beds that you're creating here?
Well, the average size of the yards are about 20 feet wide when you take out the driveway.
Yep.
So these are 25-foot lots and maybe 5 to 6 feet deep. So these are small yards. People can also use that strip between the sidewalk and the street if they'd like to plant that up, and some people do that. So they're typically, you know, maybe 20 feet wide and 3 or 4 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
That would be average, but people have all sizes. So we have people who have planted up their whole strip between the sidewalk and the street, and people who just want to put in a little corner because they don't feel they have the health or the energy to maintain a bigger garden.
That's great stuff. And Lydia, finally, have you had any issue with either people sort of either, I guess, vandalizing or damaging the yard or the garden, or critters doing that? Any issues?
On our street, no.
Good.
Actually, they actually always, I was thinking the children maybe would go and pluck the plants and stuff like that, but being that they put the work into it, they're kind of the guardians of the gardens.
And we tell everybody that they can call the Gardening Helpline, which is run by Master Gardeners at Cooperative Extension. So that's 753-2555, and it's open during the growing season, Monday to Friday, 9 to noon. So any question that people have about critters, about insects, about why is my plant turning yellow?
Yeah.
Just call.
Should I replant? Should I plant something else? Can I move it? Can I split this hosta?
Can I plant grass?
Can I plant grass? there you go. It's really great stuff. And I'm thinking about my next door neighbors, Dave and Patty. I've called you out before, but you know what? For a while, I moved in and I thought, these people are going to make us all feel bad because it looks so good what they're doing. And ours is good, but it's not as good as theirs. Well, you know what, Dave and Patty? You've raised the standards. You've made everybody around you want to do it better. And that's just what Kathy Lewis and Lydia, what you're doing street by street all across Rochester. The results, I think, are there for everybody to see. And there's a lot of pride at a baseline, whether or not it leads to community connectedness, more neighbors talking to each other, which is another great side effect. So congratulations, Kathy. Thank you for telling about this story.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Great having you. And Lydia, congratulations, you green thumb. Who knew?
Right.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. That's Blocks in Bloom. This hour, you had the stories of Cameron Community Ministries, Mothers in Need of Others, Blocks in Bloom, three small but important examples. And really not small. I mean, they're frankly, not small to the people who benefit, but the kinds of stories that often don't get all the attention in a community like this. And that's what we're trying to do here. So thanks to all of them for being here and sharing that with us. More connections coming up next.